snapping both ways. My body threw itself to the floor, ramming my head on the stone. I saw stars, but no way was I lying on the floor at Leo's feet. I put both hands out and shoved myself to my knees. My hands were half beast, half human, knobby-knuckled, furred on the back, with retractile claws already extended. Swallowing down stomach acids in a taste so sour it made my cat nose quiver, I stood. I was taller, shoulders broader and bony, waist thinner, hips rangier. My clothes still fit, though the shoulders were stretched out and the slacks were hanging on my hip bones. Leo, eyes piercing, extended his hand and offered me his thumb. It was his right thumb, healed since one of the Mings had tasted him. Alpha offers blood. Beast thought. Is not mating gift, is not meat. Alpha offers blood. Blood is food, but not meat food. Vampires are strange predators. Staring at the blood dripping down his thumb and pooling in his palm, I dredged through what little I knew about blood sharing and blood offering. I'd fed on Leo's blood when I was dying. On Ed's, too. I'd fed when Leo tried to force a binding, but that it included him forcibly taking my blood. This wasn't a binding. There would be no pain, and without my blood as part of the bargain, no way to force anything. Leo binding failed, Beast thought. Yeah, he failed, and we are a lot stronger now. He could try to bind me again, but I had a feeling that my own magic would stop anything, especially in half form. I relaxed with a single exhalation and sank into my soul home. The cavern was palely lit, as if the sun was just beyond the stone walls, shining through, glowing, the way light glowed through the nacre of a pearl. In the cavern I heard water dripping, steady and certain, the same speed as my heartbeat. I laughed again, and my laughter echoed off the stone walls, steady and confident. I looked up to the angel wings that originated in the center overhead and feathered down the walls. Hael, stand in guard. Yeah, I was safe. I blinked and was still standing in the council chambers, still chuckling. I knelt and opened my mouth, captured Leo's eyes with my glowing golden ones. He might have flinched just a bit, hesitated just a microsecond, but he recovered. He placed his thumb between my lips and fangs. Leo's blood was salty and sweet, tart. He reached out and cut the back of my head with his other hand. He leaned down, breaking our gaze, and placed his lips on my forehead. I swallowed the blood of the master of the city. His magic shot into me, but this time I was ready. Ice and fire, the heat of a volcano and the frigid air flowing from a glacier, twining together in a tornado of power. His magic whipped me, seared me. The pain of forge-heated needles stabbed and cut me. I reached out with a clawed hand paw and put my magic over his, pressed down, my claws cutting into his power, held it still, studied it the way beast studied the movements of prey. Leo magic is in his blood, Beast thought. Yes, and he can control what he does with it. He can heal, he can seduce, he can bind, probably other things. But this time there was no attempt at binding, no attack. Instead, with my claws hooked into his energies, images lanced through me. Leo and his brother at play by day, racing on horseback through fields and woods. The night they returned, a night of fear and excitement, as they were sold by their father, who had too many younger sons. The rage of the Devovio, the madness and thirst. Later, fanged, the brothers rode finer horses, galloping by the light of the moon. Leo and his uncle, reading by a campfire. Leo and Katie, the night they first met, the instant attraction. The immediate desire. Gregoire, the first time Leo saw him, old, though still in the form of a teen, on his knees, forced to service his master in public. A shame and humiliation that was ruining him, destroying him. Leo's instantaneous and urgent vow to free Grégoire from Le Bâton. His uncle's hand on his arm, the crushing grip stopping him from drawing his sword and challenging Le Bâton to duel sang, personal combat, on the spot. Amory telling him that Grégoire had gotten away once, had been free for over 200 years. And when Le Bâton found him, the old pedophile tortured the Mithrin rescuer and laid waste to his entire town to teach the world a lesson. The night Leo stole Grégoire away from Le Bâton, the two of them riding through the darkness of a new moon night, racing their horses 20 miles before the sun rose, falling into bed together in the safe house before dawn broke. Waking together, Grégoire crying with relief and fear and murmuring over and over, "Je suis libre. Je suis libre. I am free." And Leo holding his new friend in his arms as Grégoire wept. Battlefield after battlefield spread out before them, wide and clanging with the clash of war, or the boom of cannon, or empty. The army on the far side, fires everywhere in the night, the sound of music and singing, laughter, the smells of smoke and bread and gunpowder and human blood, of fear so strong on the air it was sour, over and over, war after war. Leo and Katie and Grégoire on the docks in New Orleans, in the deeps of night, having been rowed ashore by blood servants. Amory Pellissier stalked just ahead, disappearing into the dark. The smell of the city and her sewers in the heat of the summer night. The clouds of mosquitoes. The sounds of revelry. "We are safe here," Katie said. "We three, safe at last." Leo's first sight of George's mother, then of George, in a small room near where his mother was dying. The sight of Amory dying, after drinking the silver-poisoned blood of George's mother. Holding George the night the boy saved his own sister and killed her attacker. Dancing with Katie at Katie's ladies, group sex, and feeding in a room upstairs. His first sight of a color television, of seeing the sunrise on the screen. The shock and wonder and deep desperation to see it himself, with his own eyes, even if it meant true death. The sight of his brother dying, Leo's sword in his side. Then his brother's head flying from his shoulders as Leo beheaded him. The darkness of depression and despair as the years spread out before him, empty of the sun, filled with only blood, and those bound to him. Leo's first sight of the woman Jane Yellowrock. Her scent that screamed of danger, of predator, of the ruination of all his plans. The shock when the damned woman branded him with a silver cross. A lesser Mithrin would have been scarred forever. The sight of his son, dead on the carpet in the doorway. A monster, a beast of darkness, half saber-toothed cat, half Mithrin. Dead at the hand of the woman he'd brought into his lands and charged with killing that same darkness. His decision not to kill her, but to force her to love him. Months later, the attack by his enemies, when the natural laser had been draining him dry. The woman led the charge to save him, when later, still drunk from his healing, he attempted to bind her by force. George's rage and ferocity. The woman's resistance, his realization that he had erred, the sensation of a small part of the soul he feared he no longer had, slipping away. He had never told her that she had bound him instead. A vision of Jane, on the dance floor, a warrior woman of her tribe, dressed in vibrant silks, dancing, whirling, as sinuous as a snake. The feel of her body against his as he led her in a dance of passion. Her refusal to become his in truth. Her ability to thwart him at every turn. Her honor, his honor. Leo slid his thumb from his mouth. I blinked. No, not Leo's mouth, not Leo's. My mouth. The sensation became my own, his thumb sliding across my lips, the taste of Leo on my tongue. I blinked, found I was gasping, crying. Alex grabbed my arm and dragged me away from him, whispering harshly, "Bruiser staked the MOC to protect you." The room was in an uproar, people shouting, the smell of blood and anger and battle. The ebony table was empty of clan leaders except for Sabina, wearing fresh whites, healed, her fangs schnicking down, all 5 inches of them. Her jaw was still unhinged. I was leaning limply across the table, entirely too close to the outclan priestess. Eli and Bruiser were squared off together against Leo, who was sliding to the floor in a boneless heap. It was the blood of the MOC that I smelled. I wrenched my arm free and croaked, "I'm okay." Alex's face said I wasn't. I scrabbled, fighting for balance, my bare paws on the cold floor. I'd lost my shoes when I half-shifted. I fought for control. Bruiser raised the bloody stake high. I pulled the Moogle blade, shouted, "Stop!" But my throat was dry, voiceless. So I pulled a gun and shot into the only thing dense enough to safely stop a fired round, damaging the antique carved table that was probably worth more than my house. But it worked. The table stopped the round, splinters flew, and the council chambers went still and silent. "I'm okay," I said. "Bruiser, he didn't attack me." Alex asked, "Genie? Leo, did you give me that or did I take it?"
"I gave myself to you,"
he said, as his blood pooled on the floor beneath him. I smelled his truthfulness, saw it on his face. I said, "He didn't try to bind me. Stand down." No one relaxed from combat mode, but I ignored them. I was still holding a blade and a 9mm. I checked into my soul home. Everything there was peaceful. My soul was still my own. I was slightly deaf from the gunshot, but otherwise I was good. "Leo," I said, "how badly are you wounded?" The master of the city slid his hand into his black jacket and it came away scarlet.
"Nothing immediately mortal,"
he said, with the faintest of smiles. His fangs clicked back into the roof of his mouth. His eyes bled back to human. Eli said,
"Janie, you sure?"
He still had a gun aimed at Leo. Bruiser still held the stake. He had fought the MOC for me. That was so sweet it made tears gather in my eyes. "I'm good," I looked at Leo again. "Gave me a gift, I think. I'm fine." A little teary-eyed, a little weepy, a little off-kilter, but mostly okay. Leo huffed out a breath he might actually need, and with 2 fingers removed a neatly folded white hanky from his pocket. After wiping his bloody hands, he folded the hanky and pressed it against his side. He said,
"Jane Yellowrock, I cannot bind you. I cannot even know your mind. But you now know mine. Will the Dark Queen swear to me to protect and guard my city, to guard me, to fight by my side, to avenge my death, should I fall and die true dead?"
Except for the Dark Queen title, the last part was essentially what Leo had asked Ming. This was part of the swearing-in ceremony of a blood clan. My breath went fast and my heart rate sped, things I knew Leo could detect. This was the creation of a new clan, of Clan Yellowrock, in the way of the Mithrins. Holy crap. This was really happening. And then it hit me. As Dark Queen, I could avenge his death. Plans within plans. I looked at the floor, at the feet of the master of the city of New Orleans, at the feet of the creature who had abused me, who had crowned me, who would always want to use me, whether I agreed to that use or not. Who would do evil in the name of good, horrible evil to protect his people. A creature who was rebuilding his own power base even as I was building my own to protect my people. In his shoes, would I do any less? Softly, not sure who I was talking to, I quoted, "Because I'm a scorpion. It's in my nature." From the traditional tale of the scorpion and the frog, Leo said, "But scorpions are creatures of instinct. I am a man. While it is my nature to use you, I will not do so unless the need is urgent. I have learned and changed and evolved. Thanks in large part to you, my Jane." It wasn't likely, but it was remotely possible that Leo had grown emotionally and might change. Me? I was the city's champion, which was utterly ridiculous. I am an idiot. But I'm Nolan's idiot, one who might one day do evil to protect it. Yes. And yes, I accept, and I so swear. As if I hadn't kept him waiting while all that raced through my mind, Leo said, "George, please bring Edmund Hartley, Jane's primo, back into the room. Meanwhile, J.D. Massey, do you accept the position of Yellow Rock Clan Enforcer?" G dropped from the ceiling to the floor, landing beside me on the balls of his feet in one hand, like a monkey leaping from a tree. It shocked me so much that I nearly shot him. He flowed to his feet like a snake. "I do," he said, holding out his hand. Leo cut downward with the blade. That was getting to be a pretty unhygienic, unsanitary thing, and I was glad my part in the cutting was over. Except it wasn't. G offered me his thumb to suck on. "Oh, come on," I said. "Really?" G waggled his thumb at me, blood trailing down it, and then he grinned as if this was the funniest thing ever. "Just think of it as sushi, my mistress," he said. "Bird blood? I hope you washed that thing." I opened my mouth and G hesitated, meeting my eyes. The grin slid from his pretty face. The blood on his hand shifted from scarlet to sapphire blue, its true color. There was something vital, weighty, even imperative about the misericord of the city offering me his blood unglamored. Black eyes intent, he placed his thumb into my mouth. His blood was thick and bright, sweet like agave syrup. Beast's synesthesia flared, giving G's blood the chill of deep blue water. The smell of midnight in a winter forest, thousands of stars overhead, shimmering through naked branches. The sound slash vision of indigo or woad splashing in a vat, staining a pair of hands. The sensations shimmered into taste and texture of ground lapis lazuli and sugar on my tongue. The sound of sapphire wings in flight. "I am yours, my mistress, my little goddess," he whispered. I encircled his wrist with my long, knobby fingers and pulled his thumb away. Irritated, I said, "I'm not a goddess." "As you say, my mistress, I swear loyalty to you above all others, in every circumstance outside of my misericord duties. In your absence, I swear to your clan and to its scions and cattle." "Back at you, little bird." But it didn't come out flippant, as I intended, but somber, unsmiling and resolute. G stepped back, and when he was about 5 feet away, he bowed, bending one knee and sweeping with one hand as if to push a cape back, or his glamored wings. He took a seat. Crap, this was getting heavy. Leo said, "Edmund Hartley, you have claimed to be bound to your mistress. Is this so?" I whipped my head to the side and saw Edmund, a nondescript, brown-haired, brown-eyed man, small-statured, at least compared to modern-day norms, and my own height. He had been healed of the stakes in his belly and was now sober, wearing a tux, when Eddie had been drunk and wearing a navy suit last time I saw him. Edmund looked pretty good in a tux, his dark hair swept back with goop, his expression strangely gentle. Ed stared at me, his lips up in the smile that had surely been the reason he was turned.
It is. We are bound. She called me back from true death, and I answered.
It hadn't been my intent. I didn't want a slave. But it had kept him alive, and at the time that had been a bargain worth making.
Leo said, You have sworn privately to Jane Yellowrock. Do you renew those vows now?
I do.
Ed's smile widened, and he pretty much quoted what he had said more privately not so long ago.
Jane Yellowrock, I, Edmund Killian Sebastian Hartley, do hereby swear fealty to you and to yours, to your entire extended and many-peopled and many-creatured family, and to Clan Yellowrock. I swear to provide for, protect, care for, fight for, and die true dead as you may need. I place all my needs second to yours and to theirs. I place my hunger second to yours and to theirs. I place all that I am, and all that I can be, and all that I can do at your disposal into your hands for the duration of the next 19 years. I am yours in life and undeath and in true death.
Those danged tears gathered in my eyes again. But Eddie wasn't done.
I swear fealty to the Everhearts and Truebloods for as long as Jane Yellowrock is theirs, and the Everhearts and Truebloods are yours, one clan, placing my own well-being beneath your own. I promise that I shall protect your godchildren and their parents and their children's children unto the laying down of my own undeath.
Edmund smiled slightly.
Since I first spoke these words, I have become heir to Clan Pellissier. Jane Yellowrock has become the Dark Queen, and I am primo to Jane Yellowrock. You no longer must protect me, my mistress. It is my job to protect you. Our lives are now intertwined. My blood is yours to spill.
Leo stabbed Ed's thumb. Red blood welled and ran down, fast, faster than most vamp blood would run, since their hearts didn't beat much. I had been fed Edmund's blood. I knew its taste, its power. I took his wrist and guided his thumb to my mouth, wondering for a single instant what outsiders would think of this ceremony. So non-human, so foreign to any culture of any group of humans, so sacrificial. Such blood drinking had guided the actions of Torquemada and the Inquisition for so many years, fueling fear and hatred and torture. And then Ed's flesh was in my mouth, between my fangs, his blood on my tongue, his power open and moving, fast as a mountain stream. I swallowed and took in his magic. It was a river of might, raging but held in check, the way water thundered down a gorge, kept in its bed between massive boulders. White water, powerful enough to destroy but full of life. Held into its course and purpose by tall and mighty rock walls. In his blood I saw myself as Ed first saw me. On a night battlefield. Bodies piled high behind the female warrior, flames leaping. Gunshots sounded in the distance. The reek of bowels that had opened as humans died. The particular odor of Mithrin death, smoke, blood, and the stink of gunfire hung on the air. Cown was stepping from an ambulance, the broad-shouldered man wearing only a loincloth, a sword at his hip, and Celtic tattoos dark blue and black. He was pale. He had lost blood, or given it.
I left my master's fight to heal a human, Cown snarled at the armed warrior. You owe me a boon, woman.
The warrior was a woman, black-haired and golden-skinned. Jane Yellowrock, the woman Pellissier had hired for some obscure reason. Cown pulled his sword. The woman stepped back, going for a handgun at her side, but Cown was on her in an instant, moving Mithrin fast. His long blade sliced for her throat. Her eyes blazed golden. Edmund moved closer to watch. The blade cut into her throat just as she leaped. She dropped away, tucking into a shoulder roll. Officers shouted, "Put down the weapon! Police!" They fired and Kaun stumbled before coming upright. He stood over the golden-eyed woman, his sword in both hands, the blade pointed at her belly.
A boon, he demanded.
Edmund expected her to scream or cry or wail. She shouted, what boon?
I am weakened, and the Primo requires yet more blood. You will fight in my place.
Done, the woman said. Kaun stepped back and the woman, Jane Yellowrock, rolled to her feet, the motion more fluid than a Mithrin's, as impossible as that seemed. How many are there? She demanded. Who are they? And then she fought. Edmund had followed, protecting her rear, watching. I swallowed again, yanked Edmund's hand away from me, from where he kneeled at my feet, which I freaking hated. I reached out and placed a fingertip beneath his chin and lifted his face to my half-lion face. I swear loyalty to you, I said.
Yes, my master, and I to you.
Mistress, master, I had bound Ed long ago. I had sealed that binding now. I was a monster. I almost ran out of the room. Chapter 10. My fangs were bigger than his. Leo said, Ila Younger and Alex Younger. I'm not sucking on their thumbs, I said, just as the kid said, I'm not sucking on Jane's thumb. It's got hair on it. I snorted. Leo laughed aloud.
Ila Younger, you have warred, Leo stated. You have fought and won, and fought and lost. It is the way of the warrior. You have survived with honor, though the scars you carry are heavy, and you walked away from the battlefield. If needed, will you war beside Jane Yellowrock?
It was a formal question, with an equally formal response.
If Jane asks me to war,
Eli said softly, his dark eyes moving from Leo to me.
I will war. If Jane is attacked, I will war. If Jane's friends and those she has sworn loyalty to are attacked, I will war.
She calls you brother. Will you guard her and keep her clan safe? Will you make certain that she takes time to think and to plan, to strategize, to know all the weaknesses and strengths of her enemy?
Leo asked.
I will.
I frowned. Leo had just said I was foolish and stupid and needed a protector and teacher. I didn't. I had done pretty good flying by the seat of my pants all this time. Then again, I was snarky to beings who were more powerful than I was, who had more magic, bigger teeth, and sharper claws. Maybe Leo was right. I glared at Eli, who smiled back at me with the exact same expression I'd seen him use on a lost puppy in the street. He shook his head at whatever emotions had crossed my face.
Babe,
he said, in a long, suffering tone. In an entirely different tone, he said to Leo and me,
I will care for Jane Yellowrock. I will be her second when she is challenged or when she challenges another. I will keep her safe. I will be her friend and her brother. Being part of Jane's family has made life worth living again, when battle had stolen all my joy and my belief in goodness.
Eli's somber expression disappeared, and he grinned widely. Even when she has fangs and a cat nose and a pelt, even when she insults the powerful and the mighty and steps all over their egos. And I will love her as sister of my heart. Sister of my heart was a formal vamp saying that meant adoption. My own heart melted into a puddle of goo and mush. Alex said, I'll do the same. Except for the being her second part, I'd suck at that. I turned the sappy face on the kid. He shook his head.
Jamie, please, don't get all girly. It'll ruin my image as a bon vivant, a lady-loving man about town.
Eli snorted. I snorted. Alex looked as if he was fighting tears. Leo said,
For 10 years, until the clan can support itself, Clan Yellow Rock will be paid an annual stipend to be negotiated with Alex Younger. Clan Yellow Rock will be given a property for a clan home commensurate with Jane's status as enforcer to the Master of the City of New Orleans. Clan Yellow Rock will be given property that is currently unused or was never rebuilt after Katrina to build upon and invest in. Clan Yellow Rock is established.
I have a house, I stated.
You have a personal home, Leo clarified, which you may keep. But you need a clan home large enough for scions and the humans who will feed them.
I thought about the house, the new rooms upstairs, the construction, and the crowded feeling with people everywhere. How much worse if Leo stuck me with lots of fangheads and their dinners. It would be good to have fewer people in the house. Ducky.
Ducky,
Leo repeated, as if sticking the word and its usage as an affirmative into some spot in his brain not currently occupied with important stuff. Maybe one labeled Bizarre Modern Words.
Choose a home from among the Mithrin properties, one not currently occupied.
Leo gave me a wolfish grin.
And one not currently claimed or used by a clan.
Leo had me figured out. I had been gonna take his clan home on the west side. I gave him back a grin, and currently my fangs were bigger than his. Take that, Master Suckhead. I said, I'll take the Rousseau house in the Garden District, not far from Gregoire's place. If I was gonna get a house, then I wanted one with a pool.
Aw, yeah,
Alex breathed.
Unlike Ming, who must rebuild her clan from the ashes of what once was, Yellow Rock has options. You'll choose your clan members from among my own and from among the clanless. Those dispossessed by the war that saw the decimation of 4 clans. Are there those you would choose?
Caon, I said, if he'll accept. Caon didn't like me, but he was a good fighter, and Leo had known I'd want certain people. He'd sent personal invitations to them. The sneak. Brute, the white werewolf. Kem Nebi, the African black were-leopard. Leo's left eyebrow lifted just a hair.
Will they accept?
Brute just got a new dog bed. He won't care. Kemi has no choice. He's Zeta to my Beta. I claimed him, so I'm stuck with him. Same with Rick LaFleur. Pain in the ass, but there you have it. I didn't kill them when I should have, and now I'm responsible for them. 20/20 hindsight and all that. Yeah, I'd had to claim my ex and his slave. That sucked. Leo looked at me with a most peculiar expression, which I couldn't interpret, and so I ignored it and went on. Evan Trueblood. Angelina Everhart Trueblood. Evan Trueblood Jr. Molly Everhart Trueblood, and the baby she carries. I thought Leo was gonna choke on his own fangs in surprise. Yeah, suck on that one, M.O.C. I got a witch family willing to join my vampire clan. Shiloh Everhart Stone and her friends and blood servants if they are willing. I haven't asked them.
Tex.
Who? Leo asked. I could tell he was off kilter at the list of names, but it wasn't as if I hadn't been thinking about all this. Tex, the fanghead from Texas who has the guard dog, I don't know his name. I figured Tex could handle Brood if the wolf lost all humanity and became pure wolf.
Ah, Leo said. You will need that bigger clan home.
He was teasing me. Yeah, whatever. I'll take any of Katie's girls who want to stay in New Orleans, as long as they understand that they have to go to school, sign on with a vamp as personal blood servant, or get a job. A real job, not a pay-for-sex job. And I'll accept resumes from people wanting in.
Will you now?
Leo asked.
Resumes.
Yeah, pieces of paper with job histories.
I know what a resume is.
Dry, wry, amused. Right. Sloan Rosen and his family. At Leo's confusion, I said, he's NOPD. He has a price on his head by gangbangers.
I see.
but it was clear that Leo didn't see. Dion, Katie's chef, if he wants to stay in New Orleans rather than travel to Atlanta. Up to Katie and Dion, but I'm interested. And Rassler. He's honest, capable, and my friend. And he'd been injured because I hadn't done enough to keep HQ safe. But I didn't say that. And lastly, I want Bruiser, George Dumas. I know he can't swear to me any more than the Roberts can swear to Clan Archineau and Grey Gwan. But he's mine, not yours. Leo's eyes flashed. His scent flashed, too, taking on the acrid stink of scorched parchment. I thought for a moment he was going to vamp out, and that I'd have to stake him, too. But Leo managed a breath and said softly, George Dumas, how do you swear? Bruiser moved around the table and up to us, his footsteps silent, his scent heated and calming.
I have signed a legal contract with the Master of the City of New Orleans. If the Master of the City will release me from said contract, I will swear to the Dark Queen and to Clan Yellow Rock. To the Master of the City of New Orleans, through the Dark Queen, and to New Orleans, through her.
Leo was good at hiding his emotions, but even I could see the pain in his expression.
Your loyalties have changed. One who was once my primo.
Very precisely, speaking slowly, as if he too had seen Leo's reactions, Bruiser said,
I am Honorio, Dominantum Civiati, Leonard Pellissier, Master of the City and Hunting Territories of New Orleans and the Greater Southeast. I am Honorio. I am loyal.
But he didn't say to whom he was most loyal, and that seemed to tick Leo off.
If there is war, Leo asked, his voice silky and far too soft. So long as my position as Honorio does not prohibit me, I will fight beside Jane Yellow Rock and Leo Pellissier for the city of New Orleans and her Mithrins and her cattle. And if my territory alters, then we will decide what to do, my dearest best friend.
Leo tilted his head.
Friend, I will always, for as long as the sun rises and sets, so long as I live, be your friend.
Bruiser held out his hands to Leo, his arms open. Expressions flooded across Leo's face, emotions that ranged from surprise to fury to grief to hope, to some things I couldn't name. Leo looked at Bruiser's open hands and arms and looked up into Bruiser's face. Carefully, slowly, Leo stepped toward his former primo. Bruiser's arms closed around Leo. Bruiser, a good 9 inches taller, broader, more muscular than the slight frame of his former master. They stood that way, the positions awkward, stiff, as if they had never hugged before as equals. And then Leo exhaled and dropped his head against Bruiser's chest and relaxed.
I have always been your friend, my George.
The odd pause before Leo said the word indicated its human peculiarity. Vamps had associates and sex buddies and servants and slaves and scions and drinking pals. But did they ever have friends?
I know,
Bruiser said.
Relationships change, Leo. Ours did. But that relationship is still bloody strong and faithful. I am uncertain how to have a friend. My last friend was my brother, El Mago. He turned against me and I killed him. Twice. I do not grieve for my brother, George. But I would grieve for you. Then I must make certain that you never need to kill me, my friend.
There was laughter in Bruiser's voice, the kind of laughter that was also full of tears.
Will you release me from my contract? I will have papers drawn up and sent out today, releasing you from service one day after the end of the Sangre Duello.
Thank you, Bruiser said softly.
You honor me with your trust and your love.
Their arms dropped. Leo stepped back and away from Bruiser's embrace. His black hair had come loose and fell around his face in dark wisps. He looked at me, his eyes more human than I had ever seen them, tears pooling in the Frenchy black depths.
You will keep my George alive. You will protect my friend.
I so swear, I said, knowing that if I got Bruiser killed, my own life was forfeit. Of course, if I got Bruiser killed, I'd want to be dead anyway.
Leo said, bring me a cell phone and dial the Everhart True Bloods. I will accept a verbal swearing for now, should they decide to join Clan Yellow Rock.
He held out a hand, and a blood servant placed a cell phone in it. It was on speaker, and it was ringing.
Hey, Uncle Leo,
Angie said, delight and happiness in her greeting. Leo's brows, both of them this time, shot to the ceiling. Then his eyes went wide as shock morphed into something else. Something like wonder.
This is Angelina. Mama! She screamed. It's Uncle Leo!
I smothered a grin. Uncle Leo. Holy crap, that child was brilliant.
Uncle Leo!
Little Evan shouted in the background.
Uncle Leo! Uncle Leo!
Dear blessed mother of God,
Leo whispered. He sounded horrified. This is Molly Everhart Trueblood, Molly said, sounding wry. I take it this is Leo Pelissier of New Orleans. After a pause that went on too long, Leo said,
it is.
Jane said we were being adopted into a vampire clan, her clan. This call is about that.
Daddy, it's Uncle Leo. We're being adopted by Aunt Jane.
Angie Baby shouted in the background. I managed not to laugh at the expression on Leo's face, but it was a near thing. Evan, this is Leo, Molly said. We need to swear to Jane.
I always swear when the head bloodsucker calls,
Big Evan said.
Shh, be nice.
We could hear feet stomping in the background, as if children jumping up and down. Together, the older True Blood said in unison, we agree to the adoption into Clan Yellow Rock. We swear fealty with the use of magic and loyalty and love from our hearts, our minds, and our spirits to Jane Yellow Rock. We will work to keep her and all her people safe. I jerked. That wasn't what they were supposed to say. By this adoption, I was supposed to keep them safe. But the words were spoken. I said, I pledge, undertake, and guarantee that I will keep you safe until the giving of my life. Leo said softly,
your vows are hereby recorded.
Bye, Uncle Leo,
Angie Baby shouted.
Hey, my Edmund, I love you.
Leo flinched again, as if something in her words told him things he hadn't known. Leo ended the call and turned to Edmund, who stood just behind me, still as an undead statue. Something passed between them, but was gone before I could understand it. She said quietly into the silence,
the Dark Queen has changed us all.
Thank you, Leo said.
You are dismissed. I'll be along in a bit. The Werelions and Black Wereleopard are in the gym, sparring with the Mithrins. I needs must check in with them.
He slid his eyes to me.
I shall inform Kemnebi that you have claimed him for your clan.
I made a sound of disgust. I'd asked that Kemi be included so that I could keep an eye on him, keep my enemies close, to use Leo's wisdom. Leo nodded to us and ducked out the back door of the council chambers. Sabina, her throat healed but marked with a thin red line, opened the first of a stack of papers.
Your signature, Master of Clan Yellow Rock.
How many Siggies? I asked.
47,
Sabina said. I huffed an irritated breath and took up the pen, started signing. It took a while. When I was done, I checked with Alex. His head was bent over his tablet. Update on Dominique and the Shielded Witch? He shook his head, curls bouncing, and stood.
Mail driver, facial rec program in progress. Dominique in the passenger seat. Others in the car, faces unrecognizable. Wove through the streets and got on I-10, headed east. I'll update when I find them again.
Good.
Plate issued to Mithrin Council Chambers. He said.
I'm running a search for anyone who might be missing. Someone let them into the chambers and into the library.
What he didn't add was that it had to be someone from inside, likely a member of the security team. Crap.
Ji held out his arm the way a game show model would, and I walked toward him, aware of the others behind me, following in a single line as we left the Mithrin Council chambers and headed down the hall toward the elevator, silent. I was deeply, profoundly aware of the people at my back, of the names I had spoken when I created my clan, of the weirdness of it all. I had walked out of the mountain woods when I was 12 years old, naked, scarred, scared, with no language, no social skills, a wildling, with nothing at all except a gold nugget clasped in my hand. Now I had a clan of people who had sworn to me, people I needed to protect. And there would be more, maybe lots more. A cold chill skittered down my spine at the thought of keeping them all safe and cared for. Ji stopped and asked Eli for his headset. I leaned my back against the wall so I could see up and down it, the cold chills growing worse. Eli leaned against the other side, pulling his brother to his left, into the safest place, though the kid was tapping into his cell, head down, oblivious. Eli's hands went to his weapons, his face taking on that still, expressionless mask of the warrior, watching me for clues that might explain my foreboding. I searched up and down, sniffing. I couldn't see a reason for Eli's disquiet, for my feeling that something wasn't right. Trying to keep the scree of sound silent, I sucked the air in through my mouth and over my tongue, but detected nothing out of the ordinary. The elevator door opened, and though it was going down before we could go up, we filed in. Ji said, "I have sent word to the people who were invited into Clan Yellow Rock. We expect replies and vows soon." Or not. I heard the unspoken words. I knew most of my potential clan members wouldn't be able to swear face to face due to distance and time constraints, but I figured most would become my people. Holy crap. My people. The biggest part of me wanted to go back to bed and pull the covers over my eyes. The smallest part told me to pull up my big girl panties and act like a war woman. Not that war women traditionally wore panties. The elevator door closed and dropped, came to a stop, and began to open. Screams clawed down the hallway, high-pitched squeals, and low-voiced growling. My hands shot out and rammed the doors open. I dashed into the hallway, catching a glimpse of Eli and G pulling weapons, racing after me. The scent of the gym hallway was mold and old sweat and traces of old blood, some of it mine, shampoo and deodorant and locker rooms. I blew through the gym doors. The stench of wrongness hit me just as Leo himself caught me around the waist. Time stuttered. Leo grabbed me again. Time stuttered. Leo grabbed me again. Leo holding me. Together we fluttered in and out of time. Time went flat and still. Returned to normal. My momentum nearly threw us both to the floor, but his vamp strength twisted us until we swung around one last time. He caught our balance and stopped us like an ungainly dance move as my feet touched down. "My Jean," Leo breathed. "What was that?" "I don't know. Magic?" I lied. But I did know. Time had done something funky. My head spiked with pain so bad I wanted to close my eyes. Larry, Leo's personal manservant, looked at us oddly. I stopped, took my own weight and pushed away from Leo, shifted to the side. Eli and the others stopped too, studying the room, secure in weapons. I swept my eyes around the gym. Three werecats were fighting vamps, a sparring match. Bodies were flying, falling, rolling, and leaping back to the bare-handed, bare-pawed, bare-clawed fight. I caught my breath, watching as they sparred. The door behind us opened. The smell of lemon swept in, but no one was there. The anomaly. The witch was here. Before I could shout a warning, a wehrline in half-form looked Leo's way. A sod in half-form. He roared. It was a chuffing, reverberating thunder that stole all other sound from the air. The hairs on my arms and back of my neck stood up in some primal horror that said I was about to die, horribly. To Eli, I said, "Lemons."
I smell them, searching.
"Ditto," Alex said, fingers dancing over his tablet. The stench of lemons increased and the burn of magic boiled into the wide room. The werelion chuffed, twisted his head on his thick neck, and shook himself. Magic. Familiar somehow. Asad turned, picked up a vamp, and threw her across the room. She screamed in surprise, hit, bounced, rolled, and lay still. Blood pooled beneath her head. Leo tensed. The werelion roared again, clawed, paw hands in the air. Asad whipped his whole body to the doorway, his nasal folds opening and closing with each breath. He hadn't seen me when he looked this way. His eyes on Leo, then. This time he saw me. Our gazes met and stuck together like glue. He threw back his head and roared, this time in unquestioned challenge, fangs white and massive. Beast ripped into the front of my brain. Predator. By instinct, my muscles bunched and my hand found a vamp killer strapped to my thigh. I pulled it free of its hidden sheath. I was still in half-form, fighting form. Beast snarled, showing killing teeth. Kem was closer to our group than the other wares. Pulled a blade that was strapped to his human thigh, screaming a leopard cry. Kem was supposed to be tamed. What had happened to him? Magic, growing heavy, hard to breathe. A staged sparring match had suddenly become real. Kem Nebi screamed a challenge. Leo's words swept up. He shouted, "You dare!" I smelled the bloodlust on Kem Cat. "Predator!" Beast screamed again, this time from my, our throat. Beast gathered control of my body, taking over. She stepped to the side of Leo, protecting her alpha from Kem's attack. I scrabbled for control as she screamed a cat challenge. Kem Nebi screamed, mouth open wide, snout back in snarl, fangs white. Shifting fast into a partial half-form, raced to Jane Beast, raised steel claw. Beast shoved down on Jane. Ducked under Kem Nebi blade, fell to floor, stabbed up into Kem belly, tore up and side to side. Kem's belly opened, blood sprayed. Beast rolled beyond wounded cat, up to back paws, standing like Jane. But Kem, wounded, turned on Leo, reaching with leopard claws. Fully cat. Larry jumped in front of Master of the City, protecting him. Jane Beast stabbed Kem in back. Kem dropped to floor, trying to shift back from leopard form to human, to heal. But blade that struck him had been silvered and had sliced into spine. Kem was trapped in cat form, was dying. Larry was on floor, bleeding, most of throat gone. Leo was bending over Larry, cutting own fingers to heal human. Thought to Jane, "Do not understand." Thoughts raced through Jane's mind. Betrayal. Magic, Jane thought. No Grandelo anywhere. And Larry tried to save Leo. He might have wear taint. Beast screamed challenge. Hate pack hunters. Kill pack hunters. Jane pushed Beast back from control. Fought for alpha position. Beast screamed, "We'll not be beta to Jane Alpha." "Stop," Jane thought. "Stop fighting me. I don't know what's happening, but this isn't over. I'm a better fighter with a sword." Beast let Jane take over, pushed power into half-beast, half-Jane form. Screamed challenge, Asad and Nantale, in half-lion fighting form, attacked, each of them spinning to swords. Eli stepped in front of me, raised a gun and shot Nantale. She dropped and writhed on the floor. I smelled silver and ware blood. Asad roared, grief and fury in his tone. and the smell of lemons flared brighter. Assad, golden eyes gleaming, attacked. Eli fired. Edmund and I moved around him and engaged the werelion. Assad, king of the Fulani, an alpha male and experienced fighter, took us both on. Edmund ripped him to shreds in seconds. I sliced Assad's throat. Assad slowed, blinked, looked down at his swords as if puzzled. The leader of the party of African wares tripped, stumbled, slid to the floor, and died. Leo stood as Ji and Larry, Lawrence Hefner, not Larry, he hated Larry, were carried off the floor. Ji's arms and legs were wrapped around the man, Ji's Anzu magic, a sapphire and indigo haze, already healing. Leo slanted his eyes to me. They were vamped out, scarlet sclera and wide, black pupils. Silkily, his accent more French than usual, he asked,
"Why did the werecats attack us? We welcomed them into our chambers. We had signed accords."
He was using the royal we, which was always scary. It meant he was royally ticked off. I smell lemons. Smelled lemons. The scent is fading. And as to why they attacked, ask Nantale about Clan des Citrons, I said. Now that the battle was over, my adrenaline began to break down and the pain in my head spiked again. Nausea rose like a hurricane tide, and I swallowed it down desperately. I would not hurl in front of these people. Alex cursed softly to himself.
I can't figure out how to find the witch. Nothing's working.
Leo strode to the half-shifted African lion and knelt over her. He lifted her head in his hand and stared into her eyes.
Why have you attacked my people?
Nantale swallowed and swiveled her eyes to find her husband dead on the floor. Tears leaked from her eyes.
Assad and Kemnibi and Raymond Mishaika, our supreme cat, signed a pact with the Emperor Titus Flavius Vespianus for the were-creatures of Africa and Asia. We were given into the claws of a vampire as her tools. I had no choice and no say, but my husband was foolish, and now I am dying.
She swallowed again, and this time there was blood on her lips, bubbling with her breath. Her lungs were compromised.
Mishaika will take my kids and kill, or enslave them. Swear to me that you will protect my kids and I will tell you where the papers of parley are, and you will know your enemies.
Leo said,
I will arrange to take your kids to safety, with others of their kind. The papers are in Assad's bag, in the hidden compartment, at the Royal Sonesta.
That was a Nola five-star hotel. Nantale reached up and grabbed Leo's hand. He returned the grip. Nantale's skin went pasty, and then quickly ashen. She spasmed, coughed. Just that fast, Nantale died. Leo stroked her face once and gently placed her head on the floor. It was over, whatever it had really been. I looked around the room. Vamps were standing in small groups, and I memorized who was with whom. Who had weapons drawn, who looked happy and who looked disappointed at the outcome. I opened my mouth and scent searched for lemons, but the smell was gone. Good thing, my head hurt too bad to fight a witch right now. Leo stood, spitting mad, and rounded on one group of vamps. He addressed Tex.
You'll go to the Royal Sonesta and find the papers of parley. You will bring the offspring of our enemies here to safety. You will treat the kids with kindness and respect as valued guests.
Tex slanted his eyes at me and I gave him a small nod. To Leo he said, I will, my master, which gave Leo control over some of the most important African werelions on the planet. Kits he could shape and raise as he wished. Nice move, I thought, if he brought up his foster kits to believe in personal freedom and responsibility. If. I guessed that being fostered by a vamp was better than being killed in the claws of an adult big cat.
Once Nantali's kits are safe, Leo went on, I will contact the Party of African Wares. PAW may want the bodies for burial.
He lifted his chin slightly to Kamnebi,